This podcast does contain spoilers, so if you're okay with that, listen on. If not, pause the podcast, go watch the movie we're about to talk about, and come on back.
All right, sweet.
Excuse me.
Brian, over here. Hey.
Pardon me.
Why don't you have the popcorn? It's starting!
Woo!
Hey! Shut up and listen to the podcast. Hey!
There's a lot out there to see. This is what we watched.
America,
fuck yeah.
Going out to see the motherfucking day, yeah. America, fuck yeah.
Freedom is the only way, yeah. Terrorists, your game is through. Cause now you have to answer to
America, fuck yeah.
You had to ruin it. We had a good thing going, man. We had a good run. Matt, thanks for being here. I appreciate that.
I appreciate you appreciating me, and I appreciate being here, too.
Good. Luke?
What are we here for?
Well, I guess we'll just jump right into it, then. No banter, no fun, no cold open.
We're beginning.
We are...
Well, I thought my rendition of America Fuck Yeah was our opening.
That was a good opening.
Because it is a pretty explosive song. For what we're about to talk about.
We are talking about something good, and you're right, Luke. We are here at the beginning. I'm Brandon. I've got Luke Antonio. I've got Matt Blimpton here. I realize I didn't introduce us last episode. Apologies to everyone who was so confused by listening.
Wow.
But by now, we were 7 episodes in. You should have known who we were.
You should know my dulcet tones.
I don't expect anything from you.
This is what we watch. This is a podcast. It's for movie lovers.
Wait, it's a podcast?
It's a movie review podcast, if you want to get specific.
We're reviewing
about
a movie?
Well, not today. Usually we do movies, but sometimes...
It's a cinematic show.
Yes, sometimes we'll do TV shows. And today, we are finishing Fallout, the TV show.
And then we start Big Bang Theory,
we're beginning.
Right?
All started with a Big Bang.
I kid.
Thank God, because no.
It's 2.5 men.
Men,
oh,
men,
got him
men,
twice.
Men,
or is it 2.5 ghouls?
Ghoul.
Oh, God, this was a mistake, wasn't it? Scrap the whole project.
I'm out.
I can't take it anymore.
Now, see, Michael Schur may have the best shows on TV, but Chuck Lorre has the best theme song for his
okay,
TV show.
He had the foresight to hire the Bare Naked Ladies, which, you know, I will not hear any disparagement of BNM.
The Bare Naked
BNL.
Ladies is a great band. I've seen them live twice. They're fantastic.
They are.
Fuck off with that shit. Don't look at me.
Don't you dare look at me.
Are they hot?
That. So today on the
podcast,
we're
talking about the beginning, which is like
this
that Smashing Pumpkins song.
This is already chaos. I don't know how we're going to get through it.
I just realized it's like that Smashing Pumpkins song.
It is.
The end is the beginning is the end.
That is true. Ooh. But I also, to get really, you know, introspective and ooh, cinema, but I really love the titles for the first and the last episode of season one. I love that the first episode is titled The End, mm-hmm. right? And the very last episode is titled The Beginning. And
it's very inverted, apropos.
And it's very apropos and it's very inverted and it's just, honestly, to me... And this is me now speculating on stuff that I haven't seen yet, because there is no season two yet, Matt.
Yeah.
So here's my theory for you, is that this is the true beginning of Lucy's character. This is the true beginning of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything we just saw was all the backstory, all leading
was,
up to it.
And was also the end of her innocence.
Absolutely, it was. It was truly the end of who
she was. Because she and Maximus are about to lose their innocence.
I think she. I don't. I'm pretty
she's
sure
already
she's
lost her innocence.
Oh, okay.
More than once.
With Chet?
No.
Unfortunately.
No.
You know.
No.
But yes, I would.
The Troy Baker lookalike that was the dollar store Troy Baker. That was her husband for like 2 minutes before she had no choice but to kill him with a blender.
That's true. But. If you don't mind, while we're at the beginning of the beginning.
The beginning of the end of the beginning.
I would like to give out...
this is the end of the series.
I would like to give out some shout-outs for their Emmy nominations.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Shout out to the Emmys. Thanks for sponsoring today's show.
ABC, you know where to find us. Disney.
Dun, dun, dun. Wait, that's the wrong one.
That's NBC.
Thank you for getting that. All right.
Wow.
To explain the joke, it's not very funny.
The more you know. Dun, 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 dun. See, I can...
Luke,
I can...
take us away.
So, between the right creative Emmys and the primetime Emmys, they have a total of 15 nominations. For the creative Emmys, they are nominated in the following categories: for production design, for a narrative period or fantasy program.
Okay.
Outstanding fantasy sci-fi costumes.
Okay.
Outstanding main title, which I think you were about to get into, which reminded me of this. Outstanding prosthetic makeup. Outstanding period or fantasy sci-fi makeup. So one is prosthetics, one is not.
Okay.
That's the difference there. Outstanding music supervision, which we've been going on and on about their music choices.
Yeah.
Outstanding picture editing for a drama series. Outstanding sound editing for a comedy or drama series, which, you know, we've talked a little bit about sound, but just to give the sound team another shout out.
One of the best sounds in this whole show is the ghoul's gun. The way that thing goes off and goes through a person.
Are we talking sound design?
We're talking both sound editing and sound mixing. So the overall sound design.
Okay.
Because I feel like the sound, not the sound editor, I can't think of who it is, the sound supervisor, song supervisor, the person who is compiling all of the actual, like, you know,
the
songs.
The needle drops, yeah.
And not the score. Like, I think there's a difference between the songs and the score. Yeah.
And then there's sound as well.
Sure. Okay, cool. Yeah. So we haven't even got to score yet. Okay, cool. Gotcha.
Well, I mentioned their music. Music supervisor.
Ah, there it is, the music
outstanding
supervisor.
Music supervision.
Yep, 100%. 100%.
Outstanding special visual effects in a season or movie or TV movie. Outstanding stunt performances.
Yeah.
And then outstanding stunt coordination for drama programming. Those are all creative Emmy nominations.
Dang.
Goddamn.
And then we have three big ones for the primetime Emmys, which include drama series, lead actor for Walton Goggins.
Oh, that's good.
And outstanding writing for a drama series, specifically for the episode The End, which was the beginning.
Which was the beginning.
Which is not what we're talking about today.
We're talking
about the beginning, but we're at the end.
Even though the end is where we're at.
Yes.
In the middle of this episode. We're in the middle of the beginning, which is the end of the series, but not
of the season.
Guys, my head hurts.
But the series itself is only beginning.
I need an adult.
I am an adult.
So I want to wish all of these people good luck, especially Walton Goggins. I know he's up against some heavy hitters.
Yeah.
Gary Oldman is up there. The guy from Shogun.
Hiroyuki Sanada.
Yes. And then there's been
Shogun
some outstanding writing.
I need to watch it too.
We were remarking that it was a dry year for movies.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like TV's kind of been the opposite.
Okay.
There's been a lot of really great series that have come out.
I mean, from what I've heard, Shogun just kind of took streaming by storm for a while, and then The Bear just came back earlier this month.
Well, Shogun has 25 Emmy nominees.
Not to get into everything else, like The Bear season 3 wasn't to me as good as season 2.
Uh-oh.
And I won't say anything about like
any plot
lines.
Yeah, please don't, 'cause I've seen any of it.
All I'm going to say is, to me, season 3 felt like season 1 as far as advancing the plot,
mm-hmm.
not advancing mm-hmm. the characters.
Okay.
That's all I'll say.
I can agree with that.
But I still enjoyed it overall. I'm very much looking forward to season 4. I just haven't dedicated enough time yet to TV yet. So I need to hole up in a corner and watch some TV.
Mm-hmm. I watch a ton of TV. Which is why I'm the one that's commenting on all this.
Good, good, good. I'm glad we have someone who's really
resident
into
couch potato.
I watch a lot of older TV.
All right.
Yeah.
I also, just a fun fact, in the last episode and the episode before that, we met a character played by Dallas Goldtooth, who is in Fallout, but he's also in Reservation Dogs. Which is also up finally for some nominations.
Isn't he William Knife Man?
He is William Knife Man. And in Fallout, he is Charles White Knife.
Nice. So always
wow,
a knife.
White knife. He's, knife man. Yeah.
He's a sharp man.
He's a say he's being typecast?
He's a sharp dresser.
He's
when he wants to wear
got a sharp knife.
Yeah, that there you go. There you go.
Real real cutthroat industry.
So is Fallout. So is the world of Fallout.
So, all right. So today on the episode, we're going to talk about episode 8. We're going to try and condense it a little bit because I know I've been kind of letting it go a little bit long, and that's my fault for sure, because I also want to talk to you guys about the series as a whole and get your reactions about, A, where you feel, kind of, you know, some theories about what we're going to see in season 2, and I want to get our overall ratings. So we got a lot to talk about today, so we're going to dive right in. So, immediately it feels like a finale to me.
Yes.
Immediately in that helicopter, the composition from the colors to the camera shake to just the actor, you know, the way he's portraying Maximus and just this sullen, like, I'm fucked, period. Like, everything about this opening scene is just,
though?
It screams finale, but in the best way.
I love when you're watching
though?
It. I love.
Nope.
I love when you're watching a show. And the show has a budget for the whole season, but you can tell which episode the majority of their budget went to. And for this show, it was this episode.
The finale.
Yes, yes.
This definitely felt like, this is a perfect way to culminate the season. Overall, I think it's not my favorite episode, but it definitely finally brought everything full circle with what we've been talking about in previous episodes with the insanity that is Vault 31, the pure evil that is Vault Tech. I absolutely love that.
See, and I asked you to write all your theories down, and I don't know if you have those with you, but like, did anything kind of like, I can't remember exactly. I don't think you were right about anything, which I'm
I don't
happy
think
about,
I was.
And not in like a neener way, but like I'm happy because this show isn't super predictable.
Yeah.
No, I was predicting a lot because I was on a hot streak with Bridgerton, which I'll face it is a way more predictable show.
It's formulated.
Even if you even if you haven't read the books,
and very
which
hot.
You probably shouldn't because the there's so many changes from the book to the screen.
Sure.
But in any case, Moldaver was not Walton Goggins' daughter, which I originally thought.
Right, right.
But there was a connection to them in the past.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, right, it's like, oh, you were on, and I tried not to give it away. I was like, you're onto something.
Yeah.
You're definitely, you know, you were in the ballpark, but it's not in the way you think it's going to be.
I predict, though, that Kyle MacLachlan was more nefarious than he let on.
Sure.
Just from the first episode. And he's I guess he is only in 2 episodes. This entire thing.
Yeah.
And I think they may get an Emmy just for the de-aging that they did for him.
I don't like it, personally.
You don't like it?
I was okay
like
with it
was
on the
straight
first
out
watch.
Of Twin Peaks.
I was okay with it on the first watch. Let I me... had major issues with it on this watch. So
let me see what they're up against, too.
So
that's a good idea.
So
but...
as far as that goes, I mean, you know, again, so I I'm glad you're wrong about a lot, so I want to speculate more because it's fun to me, even you're not even close, to see, you know, where our minds are going, kind of what direction we're, you know, feeling the show is going, and then where the actual writers are going to take the show.
I was right in that, or I was half right with what was in the head.
Yeah.
I wasn't right with what exactly it was, but I knew it was going to be the MacGuffin.
Right. It wasn't necessarily information, but it was an actual, like, something that they needed.
It was the final piece, really, for...
All right, so we're in the helicopter, right? So going all the way back to the beginning of the beginning, which is at the end of the show, at the end of our... So I love it because
which
we get...
Which is kind of middling.
Because we get a little bit of...
How about those mids?
How about those?
We get a little bit of how sinister the Brotherhood also is. Like we know we're gonna come to learn just how fucking evil Vault-Tec is.
And we also got an answer on his comrade, Maximus's comrade.
Yes,
she did it herself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was just confirmation.
I think it's they too. By the way.
Oh, my apologies. Right. So they did it themselves. I think you're right. It is more confirmation than anything else.
Oh, no, you're right. I don't know. I can't remember. You're right. Maybe this is 100% the reveal. You know what? I think it is a reveal. I am so sorry. I totally just took the wind out of your sails on that one. You're right.
Where they told Maximus, like, I put the razors in my foot. Or
I forgot about that. Right.
But I didn't know they would blame you.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
That's what they said.
I totally spent
Which
that.
Set so much more emotion than they could have realized.
Exactly.
And he's kind of in a similar situation. Again, he's in trouble for something. This time he's truly guilty. But they're seeing it as a show of strength.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they're like, we want you as a leader.
Oh, my God. That is such a turn. And so I love when we're in the helicopter and we get the line of, hey, the locals put up a good fight, but so did we. And then we get that just like sinister cackle.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But then we also get, like, when you play the Fallout games long enough, like, you'll get through the main storyline and locations you're at mm-hmm. will change. And so this is a perfect look into how Philly has changed now that the Brotherhood has stormed in and taken over. And I just went, oh, my God, I feel like I'm playing the game again. And I just went 100% nostalgia with it and went, oh, I love this entire setting because it's the same town, but nothing is the same at all in any way, shape, or form. And it just is just, I love it so much. And then, of course, we have the elder, right, the cleric. We have him basically, you know, handing out a judge, jury, and executioner.
He's publicly admonishing Maximus, but in private, he's like, we need people like you.
And what a turn that was, because outside, right, he's like, you know, so this isn't the first time a brother in your company has fallen into misfortune, is it? Right? Because once is a coincidence, but twice, well, that's on purpose, right? Or that actually, you know, that's not a coincidence.
The true phrase is, one time is an accident, two times is a coincidence, three times is a pattern.
Pattern. That was the word I was looking for when I was doing my notes, and I couldn't think of
it. It's all good.
So, but I mean, at least the Brotherhood, right? Twice is a pattern.
Different
twice
show.
Is like, okay, this is more than just a coincidence. I'm definitely, you know, keyed into something.
He is, and yet he isn't, because he thinks he's talking to a Maximus that is going to lead the Brotherhood of Steel into this new era, because he knows the Brotherhood of Steel is kind of on their last leg. Even though they just eliminated an entire town, that was a small town.
It was a very small town with no defenses.
With hardly any defenses, and they still took out a couple knights?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's scary.
It really is.
But it's also further proof, though, that they're on their last leg.
But it's also interesting that it took Max's friend to step in and save his life.
Yeah.
And it took that to kind of change the cleric's mind, because I think he was going to have him executed, period.
Oh, for
I think
sure.
he was going to have it done. And
for
so
sure.
that act of kindness, that act of sacrifice.
Well, I think their name's Dane, right?
Dane, yes.
Yeah.
Sounds right.
Dane already knew
Dane
that.
Or Dane.
That Maximus had taken a beating for the shoe incident.
Yeah.
So
for their own
I mean
mistake.
They kind of owed it to Maximus already. Mm-hmm. And I think they're a good friend, and they did what a good friend does.
Yeah, at the same time, I mean,
but Dane is still so inundated with the dogma of the Brotherhood. And them saving Maximus's life again kind of changes the cleric's mind and realizes, oh, this is the kind of strength we need.
Sure.
But
I guess.
Again, it's so misguided. It is so misguided. And I love that about their struggle for power.
Sure. The struggle for power is fantastic. I do want to put a quick gripe out of right before he's about to get executed, the cleric raises his hand and the knights all stop. How did they see him? Because all the knights were looking down at Max, and the cleric is way up here. So there's no way that he would have been saved, right? Okay, cool. Moving on.
Dramatic irony. why don't you just crawl right off my back there?
So we get a great scene. Again, I don't know that character transition is quite earned to the level of how far the cleric swung to go, hey, I'm going to execute you, to, hey, I want you to be my fucking second hand in command. I don't know. I feel like that's a quick swing, a major swing. But again, we got to get through stuff. So I'll forgive it this time. Yeah. I would have loved to see, you know, pretty much a half episode fleshed out about that. Yeah. Honestly, I think
that
it could
have been
deserved to see how that conversation, how that mind could have been changed. But
I mean, even a quick 2 minute scene would have been enough.
Right. A little bit more, I would have been okay with.
We don't know.
It's not like we have time limits.
We also get to one of my biggest issues with the whole series, which is finally Moldaver.
Yes.
Which they kind of made her an MCU villain.
In a way, you're right.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying, though. It's like she has these very, very good intentions, mm-hmm. but she's doing all these horrible things. And
a justified villain?
Yeah, a justified villain. Right. And it works sometimes. I don't think it quite hit its mark here.
I don't know. I disagree because she was always set up to be a justified villain. I think from her past.
Exactly. I think that she's a mirror of Hank. I think that she's an exact mirror of Hank. Because she's doing what she thinks is right to save her people. To save her people.
She's communist.
She's killing other people. She kills Vault Dwellers. She kills other Raiders. She kills other Wastelanders. So, she 100%.
All people that she believes are worthy.
Exactly. Or who fall, in line with her, or who you know will.
Well, Hank.
So anyway, so
he does
the wrong things
for the right reasons.
Mm.
So we get to Maldavers. Lucy has finally arrived, right? We're at the pinnacle. We've reached everything. We get the whole little with the Pip-Boy. We get the ding. And hey, you've arrived. It's awesome. It's interesting. We get a little bit of foreshadowing with Lucy walking through the cornfields as she, comes through up to the observatory. And we see ghouls and humans all living harmoniously together. Mm-hmm, again, interesting as well, because this is different. Right. Mm-hmm. Lucy has seen ghouls on their own, kind of tweaking out and being really, suffering. We've seen ghouls who have fully turned and are feral and trying to kill her. Mm-hmm. And we've seen the ghoul who has, been a little bit of both, who has been a little bit devious and a little bit of an asshole and a little bit caring and a little bit kind.
Internally suffering.
And internally suffering. Absolutely. And so it's interesting that this place of all places where she's. Been hating. She's been hating from afar, and she's been, leading up to this epic battle that she's gonna have to, figure out how to get her father back. And wait a minute, this place has food. It has shelter. There's kids playing. There's different creatures, melding together. Like, it totally throws her for a loop, and I just love it. I love it fucking much.
Moldaver kind of reminds me of Gore, the God Butcher. If all the people from Vault-Tec are the quote unquote gods.
Interesting take.
I can see that, yeah. But
if the
main reveals in this episode were the best part.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
From the past and
besides,
the future.
Besides the that beautiful yellow Corvette. Oh my god. That Cooper was driving.
Yeah, I love that.
I love that
car.
Nuclear Corvette.
I honestly never thought that I would want
one little tweak I would do in that scene is Bud's car. I would have made it blue. So we have the blue and yellow color scheme.
And then we get Bud.
And then Bud comes. All right, so Cooper,
in more ways than one.
Cooper, of course, and I bet you he fucked with Barb's car so that he could drive her 100%. Mm. I think that he manufactured that problem.
Oh, absolutely.
So he drove her to work, and then Bud comes up, and we have a awesome conversation. I mean, most of the dialogue in this episode is just top fucking notch. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very revealing, but it feels so organic and so fresh.
Well, they've done a good job of blending the past and the future. To where they're either mirroring themselves or one thing is leading into the other organically through the episode.
There's some great parallel action going on that tells this story through three different storylines.
With the ultimate reveals, like when they keep going from the past to the present to the past to the present,
and
that's what I'm talking about.
Yes.
It's almost like
the editing is so fucking spot on, so tight in this episode. It is absolutely fantastic.
To fast forward a little bit, I did want to comment a bit on Walton Goggins' acting, which I think this sequence is what got him the nomination because that look of absolute terror and shock.
At the end of the episode? Absolutely. Any
one of us would have had
that.
All he has to do is listen, but I think Robin Williams said it, half of acting is reacting.
Is reacting, exactly.
Yeah.
So I love that Barb gets out and she notices, she even says, like, something's going up with my Pip-Boy, right? I can't figure out, it's sending a signal somewhere, but I can't figure out how. And Bud's like, hey, we'll take it to IT. She's like, nah, I got this. To me, this is another gripe I have with this, right? I love this episode, but I also kind of hate this episode. Because to me, I feel like Barb is too smart. I feel like she's way too smart to just brush this off and not know that it's her husband who's spying on her, which I hope is revealed. That's one of my theories for season two, is that Barb actually knew and that she was okay with them separating.
I think Barb's still alive.
I hope she's still alive. That's that would be theory. Such a letdown if she wasn't. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm going to need you to do is crawl all the way off my back there.
Let me get off of that thing.
And but then again, we have an awesome, and honestly, I would, if I was in this position, I 100% would make some kind of corny joke like this, because that's just who I am. I hate myself for it, but hey, here we are. I would definitely make up something like Buds Buds. It's the stupidest thing, and I love it. It's so great.
I thought your corny joke was going to be about the cornfields that Lucy walks.
You couldn't let me have this one, could
you? Get out. Just get out. I know you're on the. I know you're on this episode, Luke, but you know what? So, Brandon.
What's up, Matt? We'll have AI replace him. It'll be fine. It'll be all right.
Oh, wow.
We'll get one of those Robco robots to come in, and we'll have Matthew Berry, his
yes,
voice.
Hello. Please.
What this can I be a some assistance for?
Never been there before.
I love that.
Such a great line. That's just for him not being nominated for that line, and that line alone is just a crime.
Voice actors don't get the recognition.
They never do. They never do. But no, we finally get some massive, massive reveals in this episode.
Absolutely.
And I feel like it's about half of the episode that's just expository dialogue.
Well, it truly
revealing
is.
Everything.
Every scene has some bit of expository dialogue, mm-hmm. but like I said, it feels so realistic and organic,
and
it
doesn't
feel
like
expository.
It doesn't feel like we're drinking from a fire hose either.
Correct. And it starts here with Bud's conversation, right? He leans in real close. He's real, like, almost secretive with it. So it's a one-on-one conversation, even though, right, there's so, like, again, Cooper has not paying Bud any, like, respect. He's not giving him the time of day.
Well, why
he
should
doesn't
he?
Think of him as something but an annoyance and a side character. So he's, like, engaged in this secret conversation. And yet it takes, some lie, this line, and I'll tell you in a second because I love this fucking line, for him to actually go, wait a second, you actually are in charge and you actually are the one running the show and I should have been paying attention to you. And the line is, the biggest obstacle to achievement has been the brevity of the human lifespan. Ideally, Buds Buds will keep my project on track centuries into the future. Right? Right there. Quick, snappy, and you get his goal. You get mm-hmm. his understanding of the world, and you get that character's perspective of, hey, it takes time
he's thought
to
it
do
through.
Things. He's absolutely smarter than Cooper has let
than
on.
The average
now, is that when they're in the war room, or is that outside still?
No,
that's
in the
just
car.
Outside.
That's still with
but
the car.
Then,
that's just an open, free invitation inside of this heinous character.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you get the little foreshadowing into what Buds Buds actually is going to turn
but
into.
But doesn't that
it's beautiful
cut to Norm at that point?
Yes and no. Not quite. So then Barb's like, hey, we got a meeting. We got a big day. We got to go. Mm-hmm. So they go inside. Cooper tries to listen in. It doesn't work because it's a piece of shit. It's a piece of junk.
This is also where Bud says, we'll take your Pip-Boy to the tech.
A little bit before. And Barb's like, nah, I got it myself. So she doesn't figure it out, which also is anyway. So, Coop gets up and he decides, hey, I'm going into HQ, and I'm going to go and listen. I'm going to get closer to make sure I hear whatever it is that's going on. And this one is probably another one of my favorite title cards as well. So again, all the title cards, except for the last episode, fantastic. It's spot on. Love it.
The last episode, not this last episode, the one before this, which isn't the beginning or the end.
Luke, we're on a higher story of a building.
You're gonna push me off. Is that what you're saying?
All right. So
I'm not saying anything like that, Luke.
Yes. So now, back in the present, Lucy's found her dad. His dad's caged up, right? Still alive, but in a cage, in a fucking giant bird cage. Moldaver is sitting there enjoying a meal, right, with another ghoul sitting at the table. Ooh, interesting.
Ghoulish.
I like Lucy's idea that she's going to bring a grenade in the head. She's like, I thought about this moment a lot. One of my ideas was I was going to blow you the fuck up. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She didn't go through with it because it was a dumb idea, but I love it.
And the golden rule.
Well, right? it shows how much she has changed from this wasteland. The head is right there, and his question has kind of been answered right there. I thought of putting a grenade in this head and then detonating it. Like, the fact that... That's her response to the golden rule at this point.
Yeah.
Because of what Moldaver did to her vault.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, shit. Okay.
And of course, I love that she drops the head right on the fucking plate of food. Like, hey, you're not doing this. Take this power trip. This whole scene is a masterclass on power trip and like how to win a scene.
Yes.
And how to take it back.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. It's fantastic.
Her delivery in that, her monologue there is just fantastic.
Yep. Yep. And so it's like, again, so the tease on the reveal, the tease on who Hank really is, mm-hmm. and how Hank is just like pleading from the sidelines, hey, shut up. Just let's go. Let's go. Don't listen. It's okay. We're fine. Go home. Da, blah, blah, blah. Does everything he can to stop it.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
But then there's all, exactly. Well, and there's a fantastic, sorry, I'm steamrolling. There's a fantastic visual cue here where Moldaver says, you think your dad was born in a vault? And we cut to the logo of Vault 31.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Brilliant stuff. So now we're back in Vault 31. Norm finds a brain in some kind of little robotic, you know, wheelchair, I guess. And it's trapped behind a broomstick. And I love that. So it's revealed, not quite that this exact instance, but it's revealed that that's Bud. That's Bud's brain. Mm-hmm. That's fucking ridiculous. Bud's brain. I like that. You know, again, brings up more questions than we have time to ask.
Yeah, but I love the whole...
I love the gag.
Oh, no, I got this.
Nope, this for victory, this for America. This will be it.
I don't know why I was picturing Jason Bateman playing that part.
Oh, shit, that would have been a good get. That would have been good.
Like, his just... The way Jason Bateman comes off as cynical, but also...
Yeah. Because Bateman can do that on a dime. Yeah. He can be comical and sinister. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
With the same face. Like, it's
shockingly
insane.
So.
It's so that would have been a great get. I still like our Bud. I really do. Yeah, don't tease me with that universe. But I also love the gags with the robot with, hey, I'm going to stab you with this needle. Just don't move. Let me come to you.
Yeah, don't go anywhere.
don't open that door. Don't you read the terminal.
So this is just going back to my whole Wizard of Oz thing that I was talking about. So Hank and Bud are the wizard in this world.
Oh, Hank's like it.
Hank, I would say Bud more so.
Yeah. Bud's definitely the wizard. I would say Bud's definitely the wizard. You're absolutely right with that. Hank, I think, is just a...
But they're both
Hank's
revealed
a flying
to be
monkey.
Far more despicable than...
Yeah, 100%. I think you're absolutely right.
What I'm trying to say is they're both masterminds of this sinister plot, really. And they're also far more despicable than... And pathetic.
Yeah? No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
It's freaky, but... We finally get the reveal of who are the residents of Vault 31. They're not all brains.
No, they're not all brains. But back in the past, so Cooper is in the Vault Tech HQ. And
he's in his wife's office.
Right. What is he thinking? What is he thinking that he's going to stroll in, ask for his wife, and she's not going to find out that he was there? What?
Well, they kind of work around that, too, with the fact that, you know, he's got a close relationship with his wife, and they always visit each other at work. I think that's one way to work around it. Plus, we get to see a certain someone.
We do get to see a certain someone. Did you guys know who it was before
it
was revealed?
I didn't know
before
until,
the name?
Until she said, Hank, come in here. And
No. I'm talking Betty. Did you realize?
I didn't realize
what?
That was Betty.
Who until this moment?
I totally forgot. No, I remember.
Oh, okay. cool.
I remember that.
Who was
but I totally spaced
the assistant
on that.
when
secretary.
Hank is in the office and he's like, "Hey, how long is Barb going to be?" And her assistant goes, "Oh, she's in a meeting, but there's somebody who has been calling you, and can I bring him in?" That is Betty.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah, it's Betty.
It's young Betty.
What?
Yeah.
Bam-a-lam.
So, oh my God! So you didn't know that this whole time?
No.
What?
You're only saying Bam Lam because Black Betty.
Yeah, well, Black Bam Lam.
Wow. I didn't even get that.
This is
kudos to you,
yeah, I'm a
sir.
Smart.
That was,
I'm a smart.
That was disgusting, and I approve.
Everyone's a little bit racist sometimes.
Now,
I didn't write the song.
Those of
but,
Tono do not necessarily represent the views of the World Watch podcast.
That was good. But we get the reveal of Hank.
We do well, not yet.
Oh my God! But I want to talk about.
Hank. I know.
Sorry.
But because there's so much packed into this. So there's a line that Cooper starts listening right once Betty walks away. But the line that we get, the first line we hear that's distinguishable is the companies that make America great. Tell me that's not a fucking commentary on what's happening right now because
we make America
what? It is. The line that he's... Okay, cool, cool, cool.
I know. I was being very facetious there.
Now,
intentionally thick.
Now, in the war room, right, this meeting is 100% Dr. Strangelove.
Thank you.
It is. It absolutely is.
100% Dr. Strangelove. Yeah,
obviously.
I mean, just...
My favorite Kubrick movie.
Great Kubrick movie. Fantastic Kubrick movie. We'll have to try and squeeze it in on the pod because it's just great. But the monologue, Bud's monologue, is absolutely astounding. I love it.
It is one of the most cynical things and one of the most terrifying things I've ever heard.
Right, because honestly, if you think about it from the way, from the viewpoint of a capitalist, of a true, you know, 100% diehard capitalist, that is the way to win capitalism, is to create a fucking monopoly. Yeah. It really is. But he's got a point. You don't outbuy them. You got to outlive everybody.
Yeah.
Right? And again, that's
he understands the effects of longevity.
Yes. Yes.
And convinces basically everyone else in the war room, Robco and all the other tech giants, that, oh, well, I guess if you can't beat them, join them.
I guess, right? Now, I have a question for you guys because I'm not sure about this. Who is it? So Barb, right? She tinkers with the Pip-Boy a little bit before she delivers her monologue. She tinkers with the Pip-Boy, and then she looks up and she sees a silhouette, you know, in the window. Now, I at the very beginning when I first saw the episode, I thought that was Cooper. I don't think that's Cooper.
No, it's some sort of Big Brother type.
Okay, so we just think like it's like the president or right some
CEO
higher up.
Of Vault-Tec.
Of Vault-Tec. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. So we just think it's some lackey, someone else. Great.
Or not even lackey. I'm talking.
You're talking. Oh,
saying
well, lackey was the wrong
one. There's even a line in this episode about there's always somebody behind the wheel.
And
I think this is a great example of there is somebody else behind the wheel.
There it is. Perfect. That's all I needed. I think you're absolutely right. Perfect. And then, of course, Barb starts. There's too many B names. Barb starts talking, right? She starts giving her her speech about, hey, you know, about my daughter and about how what my vision for the future. Mm-hmm. And it's tragic. It's so tragic because you hear
she's very much part of her self preservation, like just those that are closest to her.
Well, yes, but in a way, but because Cooper is there, like rooting for her, like come on, set him straight, do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
I still love you. You're still right. My wife, you're the mother of my child. Like, I know that you are doing the right thing, and then right. So anyway, so then we get back to the vault, the big reveal, right? The main reveal of the vault of what 31 is, right?
Yep.
Which is Bud's buds, right? Of finding out, hey, a great gag again is like. Is this where my dad's from? And the robot, you'll never find out. He flips a switch. Oh, he's going to find out. It's great.
And that is a terrifying reveal, too, of all the cryogenic chambers, which is another element of the games being switched on its head. Because we've seen cryogenic chambers in the games before, but they're more for preservation of those that are just, you know, not ready to go out to the surface. Okay, fine. That's one interesting way of looking at it. But this is like, no, whenever an overseer dies in 33, we're going to send someone from 31.
And not just send someone from 31. We're going to send them to mate with the vault dwellers and to create, again, it's a gag, but at the same time, it's not, a collection of super managers, right?
Yep.
People who all think the same and who all are controllable.
When you are glum, vote 31.
Mm-hmm. And then, so back in the past, the other CEOs of the other techs, so we got what Robco, we've got, who else is there?
I can't remember the names of the other.
I can't
I want to say other corporations, but they're not part of Fallout at all. They're part
I feel like
of
they're,
Team
they are.
Fortress.
No, they're
Valve.
Other departments. They're departments of Vault-Tec, right?
No, they're definitely other companies.
Robco is its own company,
yep.
But they're one of the companies that's like, if you can't beat them, join them.
Exactly.
They're
part
sister companies and partner companies.
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure they're
confirmed
all...
Confirmed, Vault-Tec is Disney.
I will not say yes, it is.
Matt and Brandon's views are...
But the so the other CEOs kind of, so they take this idea, right? Because what Bud and what Barr were talking about is, so there's a bunch of different vaults across America, right? So it's like, hey, you know, what are, do you want to do with these vaults? How do we sell them? What's the point? Why would we buy these? You know, what could we do with this? And they're like, you can do whatever you want with the people who inhabit this. Mm-hmm. Think about, run wild. And so they do. So they're like, well, we could create super mutants. So we could, you know, take these immigrants and we could, you know, mm-hmm. fuck them up with radiation. See what happens there. We could do all this insane, like Nazi type shit that just, you know, who would ever dream of doing something like this?
Nazis.
But that's the fucking point of what Vault-Tec is. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever you want, you run it how you want and let the best idea win.
As long as you paid your dues.
Exactly. And then Robco's man asks how Vault-Tec can guarantee the results of all of this. How can we ensure that this is actually going to happen? And then, oh, one of the greatest moments in this show, Barb.
The line.
We will drop the bombs ourselves.
Yep. Yep.
Because?
And because then we get Cooper's reaction.
Oh, no. The fucking line. The payoff.
Well, we haven't got there yet.
All right.
We haven't got there yet. We get the... Yeah.
That's my favorite.
Oh, yeah, we're almost there, I swear. But I want to take this moment beat by beat. I know we're running out of time, but beat by beat with this one because it's accentuated by the score, by the sound design, by Cooper's or by Goggins' acting abilities.
Yeah. Yep.
Everything molds together so
perfectly.
Even
Moldaver revealing a lot of this information.
Exactly.
Well, and
he
it's
just goes so numb
yeah.
like to everything because all of his suspicions are confirmed. Yep. Everything that Moldaver is saying is true. So now he's like in a spiral about, well, shit, is communism good? Like, I thought I was fighting for the right side. You know, what is up, basically? And he plays it just absolutely astounding. Yeah.
You know what is so funny about this is that simultaneously the end of this season of The Boys does a very similar thing. It's also Prime, where we see capitalism turn into fascism.
Interesting. All right, I haven't got there yet. Yes. Don't spoil
like
it.
They're
I'm sorry,
warning
I still
us.
Haven't got there yet.
It's like they're warning us.
Weird.
Hmm.
So, now we get to the I guess your big reveal, Matt.
My favorite reveal.
Your favorite reveal. Is it's Hank.
Yep.
So everyone's from the past now, essentially.
Well,
everyone
all Vault 31 people are from the past. The only people that are really part of the future are the Brotherhood of Steel, Maximus and his friends.
Sure.
And
Lucy.
Lucy and Norm.
Yeah. Norm. That's it.
And some of the creatures, I guess.
Yeah,
some, but it's not the same, but... I know you were saying you didn't really like the de-aging,
well, I
but I really liked it.
I would recommend going back and rewatching it because it feels very emotionless. It feels very...
I don't know. I think that's kind of part of the point. Kyle MacLachlan's got such an interesting face because if you haven't watched it, I highly recommend you watch Twin Peaks because he's got a very similar... like it looks like he's straight out of Twin Peaks in that scene with the de-aging. And he's got this kind of wooden, but... It's in the eyes. If you look
and
at
also,
his eyes,
also
his
the
excitement.
Emmys would beg to differ with you since they nominated
I
it
know,
for makeup.
That's not my point.
I agree.
That's not my point. My point is the look that he has of like this pure joy, but there's something sinister behind it.
See, I feel like it feels too masked. It feels too false. It feels, not human. It feels too far not human.
Maybe he's
to
not
the point.
Human.
But maybe,
ooh.
But that's
well,
what I mean.
Well, I mean,
like
he's again, he's just got such an interesting face. And
I
it's
think
in the
I
eyes.
Think that he can do better if given the opportunity. But because we put so much fucking AI on top of it, it just hides all of what you're talking about. I think see. There's too much technology put on top of him, and it hides everything you're saying. So that's my two cents on it. You love it. That's great. I love the moment. Yeah. I love the reveal. I love that, you know, again,
all the while, Coop is still hearing all of this crap going on.
Yes.
And he's still got to be like, I'm happy to meet a fan. Yeah.
And this is where we hear the line, right?
This is where
we hear
we come back and we hear probably the iconic
line,
right? It's the one that everyone has heard. Luke, do you want to take it?
War. War never changes.
That's right. That's right.
And it's reiterated multiple times in this episode, not just from Betty, but from Coop.
Yeah.
And when all the carnage is done, can we quickly talk about that hallway scene?
Oh, yes.
What is it with Hollywood and doing really good hallway scenes? We've got two scenes from Daredevil that are, well, hallway and stairwell. But then we also got Rogue One with its infamous hallway scene, famous. And now we've got this really fucking cool hallway scene where the Brotherhood of Steel is going to try and kill the ghoul. And they, by all accounts, should be able to do it.
Oh, but they easily
I love how dramatic Walton Goggins enters this scene. This is such an actor moment.
Oh, yeah.
Such an actor moment.
Oh, it so is. And again, and tiny gripe with an epic episode is like, nobody shot him. Nobody just went, oh, shit, there's a person. Bang. Like, come on, guys. Dumb. Idiot Brotherhood.
Suspension of disbelief, sir. I'm going to need also, you to crawl all the way off my back.
I totally forgot. There was one other casting change that I wanted to pitch was for the, what's his name? The like guy in charge of the Brotherhood.
Oh, the cleric?
Yeah, the cleric.
Mm-hmm.
Werner Herzog.
Ooh.
Ooh. And I almost wonder if he was inspired by Werner Herzog.
Yeah, maybe, probably.
In that, as that character.
Werner would have been a great pick for leading the Brotherhood, but no one would be able to believe that he is American.
True.
He's also too true. German also true. That's fair. It.
So we're going to jam pack in a couple of other scenes where Dame is feeling guilty over, right, you know, cutting their own foot or, you know, stopping from going out into the field, and then that whole, like, we don't get enough time with that. That would be another great thing to explore about, like, what the fuck? You just basically ruined my life. But then Max is like, nah, it's fine because I met Lucy, basically. Oh, yeah. Right? And then, you know, Max is like, hey, it's fine because I met her and I'm going to go live in a vault. And Dame's like, there's no leaving, dude. Yeah. Like, I wish there was, but no, you're in this. Like, period, the end.
And then they go and attack the observatory.
Right, they go and attack the observatory. Plus, we also get the discovery about how Moldaver knew Lucy.
Yeah.
Fucking,
That was
we
crazy.
Hear more about Lucy's mother.
Exactly. We get to know about Lucy's mother. We get to know about the plan. We get to know about the cover-up. We find out that Hank is the one who dropped the bomb on Shady Sands.
And
Shady Sands is a real
why
place.
Why did he do it, though? Why did he do that?
Because Rose decided to take her children away from him.
Yeah.
And go and find a better life. And
with Moldaver.
Well, because everybody's gay.
No, I don't think it was that they were gay. It's just like Moldaver was leading her.
I think there was romance there. There
was some tension.
I think there was something
the
there. Anyway.
But also, Maximus and Lucy were in the same vicinity of each other.
Yes, they were around each other.
When they were both kids.
Uh-huh.
So that just connects them even further.
But also, I mean,
remember the table this whole time?
Exactly. But remember back to the episode where Lucy and Max are walking down the train tracks, and she's like, I swear to God, I used to think that the big light in our vault was the sun. Ha, 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 ha. And I told you guys, there was this eerie, like, tension music when we had the flashback, right, to Lucy in the corn maze and everything. Like, there was something that was off about that because it was fucking... She was outside. Mm-hmm. She was totally...
There.
Oh, that just is...
Yeah,
blew my mind.
Those cornfields were legit corn.
Were legitimate outside cornfields,
which means life was starting to come back.
Organic
life.
Meanwhile, Hank is flapping his mouth away, trying to
stop it all.
He's just like, "Shut up, stop it."
Which reminded me of a writing lesson that I had in film school was villains talk.
Yeah,
villains like to talk.
Yeah, that's true. Plus, I mean, and there's another thing like that this scene does really well is the overlapping dialogue. Like, it's almost incoherent, but there's the two sides on Lucy's shoulders, right? The one talking about the wonders of cold fusion and, like, the limitless application of what it can do and how, you know, your mother would have wanted this and this is what the for good for humanity. And then the other side is just basically trying to stop the information from getting out.
It's controlled and for a profit, which I mentioned in the last episode. It reminds me of Tesla and Edison.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Plus, then, of course, we get a little bit of the of Hank kind of losing it, right? So we see a little bit of Hank's darkness inside of him. We get a little bit of that, you know, bubbling as well.
Well, it's always been there. That's the thing. And we see
why it's always
observers are buds, because they're willing to get their hands that level of dirty. They don't care about dropping the bomb on innocent people.
They don't have a moral conscience.
They don't.
They don't.
Their moral conscience is longevity. And money.
So think about what Steph said to Norm, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
If your father were here, he would do the right thing.
Mm.
What's right? the right thing? Kill them all.
Yeah. Kill them. Exactly. It's so fucked up. Mm. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And then, of course, like you said, who is the ghoul at the table? It's fucking Lucy's mother. It's Rose.
She's all dried ghoulified. Up.
Yeah, she is.
Poor thing.
She is pure ghoul now. Like, mm-hmm. there's no, my name is Rose.
That Rose was left zombie. In the sun for too long.
This zombie is just suffering. And Ella Purnell, again, should have gotten a nomination. We don't have time to talk about it. She should have got a nomination because she just carries that emotion so well.
Are you talking about like the very end?
No, in when she's learning about this, when she's got the tears just dripping
that too,
down her
but
face.
I'm talking about like the very end.
Well, that too. You're right.
It's that mercy killing.
It is. Okay, so let's see. What else do we have real quick?
The code?
Hank has lost, right? He's lost his wife, his daughter. Mm-hmm. He lost everything. Yep. And honestly, even in that moment, I feel like it's out of character for Hank to give the code for the cold fusion, mm-hmm. To unlock the cold fusion, which...
Do you know what the code is?
Yes, the trivia for the cold
Do you know
fusion,
what the code is, Matt? I think we both know.
It is. It's the date of when Fallout first was
released. The first Fallout. 10-10-97.
Yep, yep. Again, I don't know that Hank would actually do something like that, but whatever.
Well, he's got other plans at this point, especially when he gets into his own mech suit.
Well, I think at this point, you're right. I think he's given up. I think maybe he knows he's
given up or his...
Moved on?
I think Lucy got to him.
I think they're laying groundwork.
Okay.
I think they're laying groundwork.
You think Lucy got to him? You think there's groundwork being laid? I think you're both right. I really do.
Well, yeah.
Clearly Lucy
got
to
him.
Him.
Yes.
I just don't think that, again, I think it was too quick. I think that there needed to be a little bit more for this character to just...
Where's Vault-Tec headquarters in the future?
To add what?
Where's Vault-Tec headquarters in the future?
we're going to get there.
we'll get there. I know you're trying. You're doing your best. I'm so sorry. There's just so much that I want.
I know.
I
know.
But I think Hank's one piece of humanity is his kids.
I think you're right.
I think he loves his kids more than anything else.
It's the last bit of what he's got left.
So
back in the vault with Norman, he's looking over the list of everybody. I did pause it right there. I want to mention because Barb Howard is not listed on Vault 31's screen. It doesn't mean she's not in there, but it's not clear that she's right there. So just saying, it's possible. I don't know where she is. I don't know what it is. But then of course, right, the brain of Bud traps Norm in, and we don't see Norm get into a pod, so there's an open end for that. Mm-hmm. What do we think is Norm's choice there? Is he going to get into a pod? Is he going to break free? Is he going to, like, what's going to happen there? What do we think?
He's going to try to break free.
You think so?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know, man. I think this is an audition.
I think, an audition. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I was thinking at the very end of my first watch, I was like, nah, he's going to get into it. And then Lucy's going to come save him. I think
Since
he's going to release
with
everybody.
Oh,
I think that's
what if his story picks up even further into the future than where Lucy's story picks up in season two.
Shit.
But we don't find out about it until later. I'm speculating for season two because I'm actually really excited.
That's
for
one way they could go.
Really cool.
But I don't know if they'll do that because they want to keep their cast.
They could still keep their cast, but they're going to be playing out different timelines, which they've been able to do this whole time.
They have been, absolutely. Yeah. I think Norm's going to call Bud's bluff, and I think that he's going to start releasing people personally. But so I'm excited to see what happens with that.
We'll never know, but we will know once season two is announced and released.
Yes. Okay. Now, one of my big things that I want to talk about is I love how insane back at the in the present this sounds is Hank says, "I loved your mother, but she stopped being your mother when she left home," and that is a direct parallel because think about this: Cooper felt the exact same way when he. Heard what Barb said, right? Barb stopped being his wife when she left home and joined Vault-Tec.
Mm.
God, I fucking love this show
Again, it's two sides of the same coin.
Yep.
We're seeing this supposed betrayal, but Hank is seeing it as a betrayal, whereas Rose is seeing it as a desperate chance at freedom for her kids.
Yes.
And Coop is seeing it as a betrayal, because it actually is a betrayal.
You're
it's
right.
going against everything that he fought for and what his friends died for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like that would lead anyone to just be like, nope, I'm done. I'm out.
For real.
Yeah. You're not who I married.
No, exactly. Like I can't live or, you know, I can't be around you. I can't. Yeah. Like, I love it. And again, just, I want more of that. Like that, I feel like, again, just got, it's too short. I feel like we need to live in that moment a little bit longer. I wish we could, we can't. But then great monologue from Hank about, you know, how he's like, you know, you've seen what it takes up here. You've seen what this place does to everybody. Mm-hmm. Everyone's equally, you know, afraid. Everyone's equally as miserable. Plus we get, I swear to God, it's got to be a Full Metal Jacket reference. Everyone should go listen to our episode from July about Full Metal Jacket. But we have one of the knights fucking gunning down innocent civilians, mm-hmm. right? So again, it's like, is it the wasteland that's doing it? Is it, you know, time that's, or is it just human nature to just fucking want to brutally murder one another?
I think it's the latter.
That gun is just his. There's no other gun like it.
Oh, this is my rifle.
Yeah, this is my rifle.
There are many others like it, but this one is mine.
Yeah.
Without me, it is useless. Without it, I am useless. I think I mixed those last parts up.
Hey,
but
you were fine. That's beautiful. then we also get a tease that Moldaver was the head of the NCR, the New California Republic. We don't really talk about that, so I'm sure that that's going to come into play in season two. I hope it does, because I love that storyline. Hank, of course, thinks he makes the right choice by bombing a fucking city full of innocent civilians just to prove a point to his wife. Like, good Lord.
The ghoul starts to reveal more of his whole motivation for being out there in the first place.
Yes, yes.
Where the fuck's my family?
Yeah.
Where's my fucking family, right? Yeah. He comes up and he actually finally says it. He finally talks about his family. We finally get that his goal has been to find his family his entire for 200 some years.
Yeah.
But Hank's argument is equally as crazy as it makes sense. It's like, if the problem with the world is factions and endless fighting, endless war, then what's the solution but to get rid of the factions? When you boil it down from his point of view, like, it makes sense.
It does in a very fucked up way.
In a very fucked up way.
I mean, again, This actually brings me to an interesting quote from Doctor Who, where he says, when you've killed all the bad guys and you've made your world as perfect and pure as you want, what are you going to do about the people like you?
Mm.
The troublemakers. Mm. I think that there's so many different ways that you can dissect war, but Fallout is doing such a good job of talking about, it's not, history isn't repeating itself, it's rhyming.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
It's still war. It's just a different battlefield.
It's a different version. It's a different flavor.
Because war never changes.
Exactly.
War never changes.
Pick your flavor.
Yeah. It's just a different battlefield and different factions.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And then, of course, like I said, we talked about a little bit about the hallway scene, just how amazing it is, how and any time that we have just light by gunfire, it's awesome. It's eerie. It's creepy.
I love light by gunfire.
It's great.
I think it was best used in The Batman.
I think
that
you're right.
Great.
I think that was one of the most gorgeous shots.
Or
ever.
In Dark Knight Rises. Dark Knight Rises did it a little bit.
Dark Knight Rises did also as well. I'm sure there's other ones that I can't remember exactly.
But those are the ones that are coming to mind right
now.
But in any case.
And then, of course, we get the whole, he's talking about the flaw in the welding and the power armor, right? And, you know, that's calling back to previous episodes. And I love that.
And we see yet another weakness in the power armor that anyone can just, like, come in and take it.
Yeah.
If they're agile enough.
If they're smart and they know.
If they know what they're doing.
Hank does and goes on his own little power trip.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because Hank's been, because Coop's been around the block.
Oh,
I mean,
talking
so
about
Hank.
Hank. Yeah, Hank's been around the block in a different way, but he knows those suits inside and out in a different way.
And I love that Coop shoots at Hank for two different reasons, because he wants to kill Hank, but he also wants to save Lucy, because, you know, I think he's becoming kind of emotionally attached to Lucy. That's why he invites her along.
Yeah. I think so. I think you're absolutely right. In one way or another, whether he likes it or not, I think he's finally realizing, hey, having other people around might not be the
worst.
Well,
he's kind of got a family again, Lucy and a dog.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's where it begins.
And that's where it begins. I love it. I love it. I also love the line. The line, you want another autograph, young Henry? Oh, God, he's just got so many quips in this show.
I love that bit, yeah.
Well, and you know what's funny is I called Hank a flying monkey earlier, but what does he do? He flies away.
Fly, my pretty, fly!
He is kind of a flying monkey, though.
Typical. Yeah. He was caged like a monkey. He's flying away like a flying monkey.
And this is the first time our three main characters are together in a scene, and of course, Max is out cold.
Yeah,
Gets out cold. He gets Kylo Ren'd, basically. It's very similar. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And it's not quite true love's kiss that brings him back from getting knocked out, because he comes back later.
Too late, unfortunately. But
a little too late there, but... It's interesting that she makes an interesting choice at that point.
Yes, the choice before Max wakes up is, again, I love it. It's kind of the same way where we saw in the beginning of last episode with the ghoul. It's like, hey, is he eating somebody? Is it a kid? Mm-hmm. Is it like, what's going on? So Lucy is pointing at the ghoul, we think, and she fires, and then he just kind of stops and staggers. Instead, it's a mercy killing because she can't bear to think of her mother, someone she loves.
How do you feel about that cliche? I feel that cliche has...
What, the mercy killing?
No, the whole, you think they're shooting at one character, but it's actually at another character. I feel like it's starting to become overplayed.
I see what you're saying. I still like it. I think that it was used well in this situation. I don't think it was overdone in this series.
And you know the like beauty of her, it's almost poetry, that she kills her mom out of... it still falls in the golden rule because she realizes the golden rule is what you do unto others what you'd want done to you.
Yes.
And
yes,
she knew if she was in that situation, that's what she would want somebody to do.
Yep.
Yeah. Just put her out of it's her not mind. Said, but it's shown.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Is what
exactly.
you want in a visual medium.
Very, very much so. So we got to wrap up real quick. There's a lot that we didn't get into in this one, so we might have to do a part two on this at some point.
I would agree with that.
But the very, very last things, so now Maximus has been declared as the savior for the Brotherhood. So that's going to be an interesting storyline to follow as well, is how is he going to get out of this,
is he going to remake the Brotherhood in his own image?
Exactly. Or very, very possible. I don't think so. I think that the Brotherhood's going in one direction and he's going to want to go a different way. We'll see. We will see. But of course, Moldaver dies. So again, we didn't really talk about the whole MacGuffin that Moldaver was and the whole false villain that she, was this entire series.
We love seeing the city light up.
The city light up was awesome, but of course it's LA, so go figure. and then we get an amazing, amazing song, My Echo, My Shadow, and Me. Another callback right there. I love it. Lucy's got to have a change of clothes for season two, right? Please, for the love of God, change her clothes.
I hope she has a costume change.
Please.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I hope they all get a costume change, honestly.
I wouldn't be
surprised, because at this point, she's off with the ghoul. She's going to find other means of survival.
Right, and now she knows how horrible Vault Tech is. She's going to want to take that shit off. I think so.
They run into Thaddeus, and she gives her vault suit to Thaddeus, and... and he's prancing around in the vault.
And then he goes to vault four as a surfie.
Oh my God, please. I love this.
That's exactly where season two is going to pick up.
That would be amazing.
And then the big reveal
about where, like you said, where is the Vault Tech headquarters, or where do we think it is at the moment?
Maybe not Vegas.
But New Vegas. Vegas.
That's right, baby. We're going to gamble with some fucking... chips.
Caps.
Caps, thank you. I almost had it there.
Well, so I think Kyle MacLachlan's going to be taking the gamble to be like, look, the 31, 32, 33 experiment has failed.
Ooh.
I think he's going to be playing this at a completely different angle of trying to save face with Vault-Tec and still get a promotion.
I like that. I like that.
I think we'll get to meet. It might not be till the end of season two, but we'll finally meet the present day version of his family.
Ooh, that would be awesome. That would be awesome.
And one thing that I'm really hoping the show does is that none of the games have done, to my knowledge, is explore the rest of the world in some way.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to know, whether it's in the next season or in following seasons, I would love to know what's going on in the rest of the world, because I don't think any of the games touch on that.
I think you're right.
Well,
Four takes place in
Connecticut, does it not?
Luke's talking about, so the games have only been in America?
Yeah, they've only
been in America.
What's
going on in the rest of the world?
How does the rest of the world
deal with the nuclear fallout? That would be a very interesting place to explore. I don't know if we're going to get that. But I would love it as well.
There's also been a Fallout 5 announcement.
No, there hasn't.
Yep.
For real?
Yeah. It doesn't have a date yet, but there was Fallout 5.
Okay, Bethesda.
No, ball's in your court now.
Well, they announced Elder Scrolls 6, a year ago? Two years ago?
Something like that?
As of this episode? And
sounds about right.
How long did it take for Rockstar to come out with GTA 6? Which finally comes out this year, I think.
I thought it was next year. 2026?
Fine,
I don't know.
2026.
Sometime in the future.
I really all right,
guys. So we gotta get out of here. So I again, we might have to come back and do a little mini recap on stuff that we didn't talk about, that we've rushed through, and anything like that. But do we have time to give our ratings for Fallout Season 1?
8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. Wow, that was quick. Matt's going an 8 out of 10 for the first season.
It started as a 6 first half of the season. And then when the last few episodes, when I finally viewed the last episodes, bam, it launched it way higher. There's still some things that could be improved upon, and I think because of how long it took for the season to really get going to get me interested that's why it stays at an 8. But I still think that's a pretty solid score for this show.
No, that's fantastic. I love it. I love it. Luke, what do you think?
Give it a 8.5 out of 10.
8.5 out of 10. Any reason why?
I think there's room for growth. I don't think it's perfect. But it's really close to being an A rated show for me. The acting, I mean, pretty much everything it's nominated for and should be for, including Ella Purnell, is just got it to that 8.5, almost to a 9.
I got you. I'm kind of on the same realm that you are. I think I like it a little bit more than you did, Matt. I don't know if I liked it more than you did, Luke. I want to say I'm probably going to be in the same ballpark.
8.25.
This might change, but I think I'm going to go 8.5 as well, because I think that it was fantastic as far as a video game adaptation. Mm. I think the acting was for the most part great. The writing for the most part was great. There were some plot holes.
There's a lot of coincidences.
There was a lot of coincidences that came through. I didn't think
because
CGI...
Because plot has to happen.
I didn't think the CGI was as top-notch as it could have been, but it wasn't bad by any means. And, of course, the production design, everything was stellar, and that definitely is where the weight of it for me comes from.
I bet the CGI will improve with the second.
I think so. I think it absolutely will.
It's going to get a bigger budget,
for sure.
Oh, definitely.
With its success
and
Emmy nominations.
Yep.
Yeah.
But then they also have higher expectations, so we'll see if we go in, you know, expecting more, and we have a lower rating for season two. But as of right now... that's a pretty solid season. So, guys, I know, like I said, we rushed through episode 8 and the finale. If anyone wants us to kind of slow down and go through anything, please let us know in the comments. We're all over socials. We're all over. We're on YouTube. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. So, thank you so much for listening. Thanks for joining us out in the wasteland. Be safe out there. Don't forget to listen to all of our other episodes. We got a lot of good stuff coming.
Great fiddle music.
Thanks again, everyone. Thanks, Matt. Thanks, Luke.
Thank
we'll talk
you.
To you later.
Thank you, Brandon.
Bye.
Bye, guys.